Welcome everyone to a Wednesday edition of the Damage Report. Yes, it's correct this time. You know, it's there though. Glad you guys are joining us. By the way, do we have big news? Do we have big news ready? I forgot to ask you guys. If not, it's fine because you know what? It's Wednesday. I'm here, and you know who else is here for big news? It's Rayvanna. She joins us on the show. I think it's becoming a bit of a staple here. Ray, how you feeling?
I'm good. I'm glad that we're together on Wednesdays. I think almost every Wednesday going forward until John comes back. So that's awesome. I'm feeling great. Got to the gym this morning before it got too stinky and
I was
packed.
Just gonna ask you. Yeah, last Wednesday it was quite hot there. I remember these conversations. At least maybe it's cooled off for you guys a little bit. Oh,
it is beautiful today. It's only 65 and it's becoming fall. I've gotten my first pumpkin spice latte of the year. So we're all set here.
One thing I can't do is pumpkin spice lattes in August. Also can't do Halloween decorations in August, nor what's the last one? What are those stores that Papa Bear were?
Spirit Halloween.
Spirit Halloween. They've already got lock on every Bed Bath and Beyond that is closed down.
Every old Toys R Us.
Why is this a universal thing across the country? I don't know. Thank you, Ray, for being here. Thank you guys also for joining us. We have a lot to get to. Lots of politics, of course. Trials, indictments. Accusations, pushbacks, all this that's usually going on when it comes to Donald Trump and all of his cohorts. Let's go straight to some of those cohorts now down in Georgia. So as legal troubles pile up for all of people who were part of Donald Trump's scheme to overturn the 2020 election, there you have Sidney Powell standing next to Rudy Giuliani. They've got more things coming their way. And as a matter of fact, Sidney had a chance to talk about what it is that she's trying to do as far as pushing back. We saw Mark Meadows try and change things, but now she has pled not guilty to those same crimes that all of them are being charged with. In case you guys may have forgotten, outside of those still shots, this is the Sidney Powell that pled not guilty.
The Dominion voting systems, the Smartmatic technology software, and the software that goes in other computerized voting systems here as well, not just Dominion, were created in Venezuela at the direction of Hugo Chavez to make sure he never lost an election after one constitutional referendum came out the way he did not want it to come out. The money creating it came out of Venezuela and Cuba. It was created for the express purpose of being able to alter votes and secure the re-election of Hugo Chavez.
Hugo Chavez, Smartmatic, these voting machines, you know that they completely changed votes just like Hugo Chavez was doing. And she was pushing these things consistently. You saw the other, other folks that were part of this standing behind her in that first part. But as you guys know, she is an attorney for Donald Trump, at least used to be, in his post-election legal challenges. And there you go. She said she would waive her arraignment in that case down in Fulton County. And of course, pled not guilty. She was charged along with Trump and 17 other of these co-defendants in this racketeering case for their attempted efforts to overturn that election, as you guys also saw as well. I'm not sure if you guys saw the full slate of all these mugshots, because everyone was looking forward, I think, to Rudy Giuliani specifically, and then of course Trump. Some of these others were pretty good. These are other couple of folks that also pled not guilty along with Sidney. There's thoughts I have about some of these mugshots. I know everyone analyzed these things deeply, but first, these other folks here along with her. Ray Smith was the first to plead not guilty there in the middle, and Trevion Kuti, I feel like I've said her name wrong every time, but she was the publicist that apparently, allegedly, some say did or didn't worked with Kanye West at one point, who was trying to force Ruby Freeman there to act like she did something wrong. It was all kinds of lies she was telling, and there she is with that odd grin and down look. Is there, I don't know, you've gone to the law school, Ray, but I'm not sure if you know specifically about how the processing system works, but for some reason I feel like the camera's up high and they tell them to look down at this white piece of paper lower and then put their eyes up so they look like they're crazy. It's almost like, and they look insane like Trevion did there. I'm not sure if this is supposed to make them look better or worse. It definitely works out badly for them, I feel like. Still though, the judge overseeing this case has scheduled these arraignments for all 19 defendants for September 6th, is upcoming really quickly. How bad of a case do you think this could possibly be for these three? Maybe they are on the right track. You have the JR mute on. I love it. Yes.
Oh, I pulled the JR. Oh my God. No, so I think for so many, because there's so many co-conspirators, co-defendants in this case, that we the media hasn't even told each individual story of involvement for, you know, each of the co-defendants, just because there's so many of them. But like for Trevion, I mean, she showed up at an election worker's house and misrepresented who she was and threatened to arrest this woman, which she had no authority to do, unless the woman confessed that she was rigging the election in favor of Joe Biden. I mean, and if we look at each of these cases, I mean, if we look at the case of the priest, you know, who's, I think mugshot hasn't circulated widely enough, and just each individual action, each case is so, particularly for all of these co-defendants, it's so strong against them that if they're not true believers, if they're not true drinkers of the Kool-Aid, then they're all going to jail for quite some time. I mean, but if they're not true believers, then they're all gonna flip. Because eventually, for the people who are closer to Donald Trump, someone like Trevion, I don't think she has any information that's going to be helpful necessarily to the prosecution of Trump's, because she's far, far enough removed from him in her individual capacity. But someone like Sidney Powell has a lot of information that can be used against Donald Trump. So that's someone they're going to try to turn. I don't know if she's a true believer or not. I can't tell, because of course you still want to present yourself as having believed in what you were doing, because you're trying to, you know, show that you are not as guilty as they're implying that you are. You were fighting for a cause that you actually believe in. But I mean, on the back end, I think at some point self-preservation is going to have to kick in for some of these people. Not Rudy Giuliani, because I genuinely don't even know what he was getting out of any of this in the first place.
Not money.
Right, but so, you know, people like, we've talked about her, I think every time we've been on together, Jenna Ellis, she's gonna flip. Why wouldn't she? You know, and I think that Sidney Powell should as well. I mean, these people are all guilty. I'd like to see punishment for them. But obviously the person that most of us wanna see behind bars is Donald Trump. And if they have information that can further, you know, help the case against him, That's what the prosecutors are going to be after. So
yeah, I always wonder what's next for these folks' careers. Look, straight up. So even if you do plead guilty, you get off whatever it is, or you skirt some of the charges, what do you do next? Right. What's next? There's no plan for how you can then take your life to the next steps. Yeah, I think Jenna Ellis is significantly younger. I'm not sure how deep into her, you know, her attorney career that she was getting into. But Sidney Powell, folks like this, what's next? You're the anchor around your neck forever. Is that you were part of Donald Trump's scheme to overturn the 2020 election, and you were one of the lower level foot soldiers who went down for him. Harrison Floyd, who was part of what that publicist was talking about and trying to convince Ruby Freeman, what's he gonna do next? He's the guy who was still in jail because he couldn't even get out like everyone else did. When he's sitting at night in the jail cell, he's going, I really messed up. Or is he like, no, Donnie's coming to get me? I always wonder when people sacrifice themselves. This is one life that they've got. Sacrifice it for someone else who's 80 years old and doesn't give a hot damn about you. Right. There's a little bit more though, because speaking of that guy, Donald Trump being the headmaster of this whole accusations behind him trying to overturn this election, he has ways that he's also trying to find a way to get away from this, at least push this whole trial date back and change things. Because as we talked about before, he's coming after the judge that has set it for March 4th, right dead in the middle of this campaign season. This is what he's looking to get for against Judge Chutkan, because District Judge Tanya Chutkan has laid out that March 2024 trial date, and it may depend largely on her ability to keep the pre-trial proceedings on track. That's what she's looking for to do this. So far, she's shown an extremely no-nonsense approach to scheduling and little patience for unnecessary delays, which might be why he's so upset at her all the time anyway. By the way, that March 4th date was 2 months later than what Jack Smith actually was seeking for it. They were trying to get this done in like January. So at least this is some kind of stretch for him. Donald Trump's still upset about it though. But he is trying to find a way to still finagle the system. Here's some ways that he could potentially move his trial date yet again. He says he's going for the executive immunity claim. Simply because he was the president, he says he can do whatever the hell he wants, include break laws. Okay. Core First Amendment issues. Again, that's the claim that they can speak forward and say that all I said was that I think the election wasn't necessarily on the up and up. Nothing about their attempt to overturn it by lying and convincing and leaning on people. And lastly, they're alleging selective prosecution. Yeah, because certain folks that just don't like him is the basis behind that. I guess they're trying to dig in everyone's brain to see exactly how that works. Let's look at that executive immunity claim, though, more from CNN. Because in several of the legal proceedings he's faced, Trump has pushed arguments that he should be immune from court action because his actions fell within his duties as president. Wonder if his duties as president include the things that they've been accused of. The January 6th federal crime case looks like it will not be an exception to that pattern that he's going with. And Bill Barr, though, who worked with him, his attorney, he was part of the whole thing. He was skeptical about that approach too. He's one of the big names that has since flipped around on Donald Trump, and people don't talk about him as much, but here he is dispelling that possibility.
And they're also saying that he was just exercising his First Amendment right here. Do you think that's a valid argument in your view?
No, I really don't think that's a valid argument because, you know, as the indictment says, you know, they're not attacking his First Amendment right. He can say whatever he wants. He can even lie. He can even tell people that the election was stolen when he knew better. But that does not protect you from entering into a conspiracy. All conspiracies involve speech.
All conspiracies involve speech. One part that stuck out to me about that, when he said he knew better about whether or not he lost, that was a big selling point, but that was a big point from the January 6th committee, talking about how many people legitimately told him multiple times, yo, you lost, legitimate, you lost. We heard that tape from Brad Raffensperger down in Georgia when he said, listen, you lost. This is why I know you lost. We checked it four times at your behest, and we still have that same answer. You lost, bro. So he can't be told this 25 to 30 times and still think that he actually won, because people that you would assume he trusted told him the opposite. One of them, of course, I guess, being Barr here as well. So his executive claims he's dispelling that as well. Let's go to the selective prosecution part. He says, we also anticipate a selective prosecution motion, given the fact that this prosecution provides an advantage to these prosecutors' boss, who is running a political campaign against Trump, which everybody knows about. That's more from Trump's attorney saying that somehow Biden is running this whole operation. It's an easy thing to tell a bunch of the supporters that Biden, the sleepy one, who can't do anything like walk or think or eat for himself, is the mastermind behind all this. Your last thoughts on this here, Ray?
Yeah, I think that none of these, you know, interlocutory appeals that Trump has sort of been highlighting for these campaigns, previewing, if you will, have any merit to them. That being said, I don't see how we can get through these, you know, prosecutions without the Supreme Court having to weigh in on the executive immunity claim. I think it's inevitable because we are, you know, it is an unprecedented, the charges are not unprecedented. Who's being charged is unprecedented. I don't think there's merit to the argument of executive immunity, and it's something that the Supreme Court has weighed in on the past with Richard Nixon, but it didn't end up mattering because they didn't end up prosecuting him. So I think that they will, though, have to eventually, I think that's the only one that's gonna make its way up. And I think eventually the Supreme Court will have to weigh in on that. And I actually have faith, even in this god awful Supreme Court, I have faith that it won't turn out the way that he's hoping it will. Even a conservative Supreme Court, I can't fathom a way in which they could justify ruling that executive immunity would be so broad as to cover all of his crimes. It's just not possible. I mean, and even someone like Bill Barr, one of Trump's biggest former sycophants, who highlighted executive privilege and executive immunity, you know, in his defenses of Trump in the past, is admitting that it's a bad theory to base your defense off of. But I mean, you gotta throw everything at the wall and see what sticks.
I hope I'm not remembering it incorrectly, but I thought Barr was also one of the folks that later we discovered Trump was actually trying to use to do specific legal moves and motivations for his purpose, as they talk about how somehow President Biden is forcing people to do this just on behalf of going after Donald Trump. So the irony just keeps circling itself. So the Supreme Court could potentially be the one to do it. But I wonder if there's such a thing, maybe for the first time in what I can remember, the Supreme Court has maybe used up all of its political capital. Usually that's for presidents or people just get in office, or maybe they've been around for too long and they have no more power. But after the Roe v. Wade decision, and see how much opposition came to that, and these litany of things they've been going against that people hate, I'm not sure if they're getting more gun shy. Maybe that's part of it.
And it wouldn't even be the first time that they've ruled against Trump, right? Because they ruled against his arguments and for the arguments that he didn't have to reveal his tax information. You know, it's a different sort of situation, right? But I mean, this is a Supreme Court, and with the January 6th case, bar Justice Thomas, they all ruled that the, you know, in favor of, you know, presenting the evidence against the people involved in January 6th. So I actually don't think that he's gonna find the allies that he thinks he will at the Supreme Court. And I think that part of it, you're right, is that they have used up their political capital. And I think that some of them are realizing how deeply unpopular they are. I mean, we have Justice Alito writing op-eds about how sad he is that people dislike him. So, I mean, I do think the political capital weighs into it heavily, but at the end of the day, I just think that there's no legal way to even, I mean, I've seen them justify some heinous stuff with some absolutely BS legal arguments. I just don't even know how they could do that in this case. There's just no substance to this whatsoever.
Seems like the momentum might be building against Trump. Speaking of momentum, let's go ahead and jump to this next story, because we have our, I guess it's our first person to actually leave the Republican presidential primary. Maybe, maybe not. It's this guy. Watch this.
If you don't make the debate stage, will you end your campaign?
I feel confident that I'm going to make the debate stage over the next 10 days. And I'll decide that, you know, but I have said that, you know, I don't think candidates should just sort of linger around if they're not, if they don't have a credible path.
Miami Mayor Francis Suarez is the first to go, I think. Again, we will double check it, but Suarez has left the presidential race. We didn't hear much from him outside of him then telling reporters that if he doesn't make the debate stage, he may not make any more of the stages. And he's true to his word. Actually, I'm a little surprised, but congratulations. He is talking about how he did leave, though. I guess there wasn't much of a chance considering Trump is still looking at such huge leads, despite all these cases that he's got around him. But he had this long shot in the first place, and I always wonder what it is that they were looking for. Did he really think he was gonna win this nomination, especially in this particular field with Donald Trump running around? Or do you think having answers like this would actually help him out more? Here's some of the things he was doing.
Will you be talking about the Uyghurs in your campaign?
What, the what?
The Uyghurs.
What's a Uyghur?
Okay, we'll come back to that. Let me. You won't be. You got to get smart on that.
You gave me homework, Hugh. I'll look at what was it? What did you call it? A Weeble?
The Uyghurs. You really need to know about the Uyghurs, Mayor. You got to talk about it every day.
The Weebles?
I don't think that there is a necessity to talk about, even if you're passionate about the issue. I don't think that if you're running for president of the United States, you need to talk about the Uyghurs every day. But maybe you should at least know who they are.
I mean, okay, so upon hearing it, I was wondering if it's a case of, you know, was it bad telephone or this old telephone joke where you don't know exactly what's said because maybe the connection's odd. He wasn't like in studio, it looked like, or even in front of like a Zoom camera. It was straight up on the phone and he said Weebles. So maybe there's sometimes other ways to pronounce it. But just in case he didn't know this was going on, that Hugh Hewitt was there asking about. Because human rights groups believe that China has detained more than 1 million Uyghurs against their will over the past few years in a large network of what the state calls re-education camps. And they sentenced hundreds of thousands to prison terms. People who have managed to escape the camps have reported physical, mental, and sexual torture. It's horrible. And women have spoken of mass rape and sexual abuse. Now, by the way, this also reminded me of times, because maybe this shouldn't have been the end for Mayor Suarez. Remember back in 2015 or so, whenever Trump was beginning to run the first time, he went on Hugh Hewitt's show. Hugh Hewitt asked him a question about general foreign policy. I think it was maybe even Iraq, Iran type of things. I can't remember. But he didn't know anything. And he's like, oh, you're trying to get me in this gotcha here, Hugh. And he instead started attacking Hugh Hewitt, which flipped the tables. Sometimes you just have to cover your stupidity or your ignorance. Or maybe it just wasn't ignorance, because a little bit more. There's more, because other folks weighed in on how ridiculous it was that apparently Suarez didn't know about it. And he tweeted out after that interview of what could have possibly been the problem. He said, of course, I'm well aware of the suffering of the Uyghurs in China. They're being enslaved because of their faith. China has a deplorable record of human rights and all people of faith suffer there. I didn't recognize the pronunciation my friend Hugh Hewitt used. That's on me. That's on me is the part that probably sticks out the most. But you know what? I kind of buy it. I don't know, maybe I'm a gullible one. I kind of buy it. But the thing is about that explanation, it does make me think, is he basically, if you give like a definition, I didn't know what he was talking about. And then your response is they're being enslaved because of their faith. China has a deplorable record of human rights. That's like straight out of like a wiki page or something. And you slapped it on your thing saying this is what I knew before. That's the part that actually makes me think maybe he actually didn't. Or there's this, because back when I was doing live watch list shows, we did talk about Suarez, and we came across his campaign page, and I guess this is something that he thought would attract folks. Remember this?
Hi, I'm AI Francis Suarez. You've probably heard that my namesake, conservative Miami Mayor Francis Suarez, is running for president. I'm here to answer questions you may have about Mayor Suarez's proven agenda for economic prosperity, cutting spending, and supporting our police. So how can I help?
Can definitely help by ending that. He's trying to usher us into the a new generation, new technology. He doesn't necessarily have to be there, but Chat AI Suarez was all over it. And if you think that he can't interact with folks, I had my old producer ask Chat AI Suarez, why is he running for president? The question was, you can interact with this guy from the side. Why was he running for president? This was the answer.
Conservative Miami Mayor Francis Suarez's leadership has transformed Miami into a city that's thriving economically. Under Suarez's leadership, economic prosperity in Miami is more accessible than ever. The city boasts the nation's lowest unemployment rate at 1.4%, and Mayor Suarez's fiscal policies have led to the city's lowest tax rate since the 1960s. Mayor Suarez's Miami model is a testament to his effective leadership and conservative principles. The Miami model is working, and it's time for Mayor Francis Suarez to bring it to the national stage.
Now that I've watched it a few times, actually, maybe it should work as it gets cleaner. I don't know, man. I'm looking for some new approaches to politics. I don't know, but it definitely didn't work out for me. Your last thoughts on Suarez?
Yeah, I first of all can't even fathom as to why he didn't just record videos of him talking of the answers to those questions. Like, I mean, that is one of the, I literally went ugh when it started playing. Yeah. It's so creepy. I did enjoy that he had his Gary Johnson "What is Aleppo" moment there. Uh-huh. With the Weebles. I don't believe for a second that he knew. And honestly, as the mayor of Miami, you don't probably need to know what's going on with, you know, the re-education camps of the Uyghurs in China. Presidential candidate Suarez probably should know. My final thoughts on him dropping out were that when we played that first video of him talking about that he would drop out, the chat for the damage report was going, who? And I think that perfectly encapsulates the end of this really sad presidential campaign.
Or maybe a good strategy. As soon as people start asking who, that means he can be like, I'm reintroducing myself now that you're talking about me.
Right.
Who knows, maybe. Let's get to one more piece of this. I know we've gone over a bit, but there's someone else that some conservative thought leaders, if you want to call them that, think should also follow Mayor Suarez's lead. Maybe you'll be surprised. Watch.
Ron DeSantis super PAC, sitting on $110 million, has just said that they are doing a $12 million ad placement right now to support Ron DeSantis. I think Ron DeSantis is a great governor. Why is he trying to ruin his political career right now? Spend that money to help us win in the general. Why are you buying ads to make consultants rich in Iowa? Just say, look, I'm going to go be governor of Florida and turn Florida into the most Republican state. I'm going to deploy my $100 million to help us defeat Joe Biden. He would be hero status in the Republican Party, win or lose. He would look magnanimous. He would look like a confident leader. He would look like he is bigger than just the personal pettiness that's going on right now. Instead, you might as well just burn that money. Donald Trump will be the nominee, absent an unforeseen black swan event.
Is that unforeseen black swan event a conviction? It probably won't happen in time. But the thought is that Ron DeSantis is supposed to now assist Trump in somehow looking like this heroic person coming in to help the party by dropping out and giving his money away. maybe it would work. But then again, looking at these Iowa voters, maybe there's reasons why he won't either, because we keep hearing about Ron DeSantis dropping down, and maybe we should start paying attention because of these leaders among likely Iowa Republican caucus goers that everyone cares about. Donald Trump's still at that 42%, Ron DeSantis is at 19. I keep hearing that Ron DeSantis is in like third place, sometimes behind Vivek and sometimes maybe behind, not necessarily Pence, but he's not looking that stable. Maybe he's looking a little bit more stable, because remember, for some reason I love this chart. And after that debate that Ron DeSantis was supposed to dominate, that Donald Trump skipped, that somehow Vivek won, DeSantis actually gained a couple of points while Vivek lost a little, as well as Donald Trump. Maybe this is the types of things that he's looking at rather than the potential caucus goers down in Iowa and where they may go. But then again, how about Iowa? One more chart because it's colorful. But sometimes when guys win this nomination or win the Iowa caucus, they don't always end up becoming president. It's only happened 3 times. The chart on the left is when they have they've won the caucus to the nomination, just over 55% they get there, but also from the caucus to the presidency, that blue circle is how much they've gone from that point. Doesn't happen all that much, so it's not always like the best a gauge of who's going to be the best candidate there, at least the one that folks will choose. Ron DeSantis, Ray, should he go already?
Absolutely not. I mean, I don't want him to be the president. He won't be the president. And Charlie Kirk is right about one thing, although I'll say that his Nike swoosh hairline, very distracting, made it very difficult for me to listen to what he was saying. But he was right that Donald Trump will be the nominee for the Republican Party. Ron DeSantis isn't going to drop out till well after New Hampshire. I mean, probably not until around Super Tuesday. He'll eventually have to drop out, but there's no motivation for him to drop out now and support Donald Trump, because he's fallen out of Donald Trump's good graces already. He's not getting back in. That's not how it works with Donald Trump. This is his shot to remain in good standing in the Republican Party with Trump as the eventual nominee. Otherwise, there's nothing left. I mean, he's alienated a huge base of his supporters in the crossover Ron DeSantis, Donald Trump supporters. Donald Trump was the reason that he became governor in the first place. His endorsement alongside a perfectly for Ron DeSantis timed sex drug scandal of the Democratic candidate. I mean, this man, I think he played his hand too early in running in this election, which is good for America, because Ron DeSantis' presidency would be, I mean, I think one much worse than a Trump presidency. But he shouldn't drop out. I mean, of course, Charlie Kirk wants him to. He's a massive MAGA guy.
The whole plan. Like, it's a little bit too much competition. Now, I've said it a million times, so if it happens, I still think some of these folks that are just behind Trump, even by a lot still, like mostly DeSantis, man, they're still waiting for hopefully some kind of big blow up to happen. And Trump is just kind of taken care of for them. I guarantee you, in my mind. One more, because this is very indicative of Donald Trump. Fidel Castor Oil says, Donald's, did you guys hear there? This Donald's First Amendment claim is just him saying, oh, there goes everyone. There's a fire in this crowded theater. It's the biggest and best fire we've ever had here. Definitely the way he works. This is horrible, and I did it, and you should love it. Let's go to this, because this guy did this, and maybe people love it. Let's go to this, Chris Christie.
Tired of the drama, the distractions, the lies? It's time for conservatives to win again. Chris Christie, a former prosecutor who convicted child pornographers, corrupt politicians, a successful blue state governor. Christie took on the teachers union and won, turned around Jersey's most violent city, and got Democrats to cut taxes. A real conservative, Christie tells the truth, and he'll beat Joe Biden easily.
Easily, because some lady on cable news said so. You see the beginning of this again? Look, the mugshot, everything is there in that ad. There's Chris Christie's new ad that's going to be launched up, and a part of a $400,000 media ad buy. Let's go to this graphic really fast, because he's looking to finally make some waves, put a dent in this campaign. The ad is part of that $400,000 media ad buy that will air statewide again, up in New Hampshire, beginning on Friday on broadcast, cable, and digital platforms. The Super PAC said this in a statement. In a recent Emerson College polling survey found that Chris Christie's making headway in the state. Wow. He also passed up Ron DeSantis, who was mostly polled in second place behind Trump. But look at Chris Christie show up. They told him in these other interviews, Chris Christie is polling at 1%. What are you still doing in this race? One debate does a difference. Look at this. Here's one of those. Here's that poll itself specifically talking about where he is. You guys know colorful polls always stand out. There's Chris Christie in the orange at 9%. He's really searching. Come on, bro. I get it. I agree. It's worth something. But damn, this is pathetic, man. The fact that this party is this hardcore on Donald Trump after all these issues is insane to me. But then again, I saw you respond to the ad there, Ray, laughing. Is this going to work?
It is so insane to me to lead your list of accomplishments with child pornographers, because now, I'm sorry, the association with Chris Christie's name for the people who saw that ad is Chris Christie, child pornographer. I mean, it's nuts. I mean, but to see Chris Christie overperform in New Hampshire versus polling in other states, isn't that surprising? Because Iowa and New Hampshire do politics is very strangely. It's very personal, even still, you know, in both of those, you know, markets, as it were. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily translate to the rest of the country, which is one of the reasons I think it's fantastic that the Democratic Party moved away from, you know, the first primary being held in Iowa, although I think South Carolina is a ridiculous replacement choice. Yeah. Definitely, it's not a Democratic stronghold or even a swing state. But, you know, that being said, again, Chris Christie, child pornography name association now definitely solidified in my brain, and I'm sure and a lot of old people who were just trying to watch their stories who had those words blasted at them during a commercial totally. Break.
And when are they going to change that law? But anyway, so Chris Christie, actually, I was thinking this before, because Christie is one of those guys who's telling all the truth about Trump right now. But it's really easy to forget how he's another Republican. All these things that he's talking about. Of course, this is a push for the primary. He's forced Democrats to cut taxes. I don't know. There's details behind all these things, I'm sure. But we're hearing this about Chris Christie. When if he does, maybe I would even prefer it if he gets a chance to be the nominee. At least that's something we can talk about issues, because the guy is wrong on a lot of the stuff anyway. But even more, when it comes to Donald Trump and his legal issues, Chris Christie's not taking his foot off the gas pedal when it comes to that. Even that trial date that Judge Chutkan has pushed that Donald Trump is complaining about, Chris Christie responded to that. Watch this.
Judge Tanya Chutkan, who is an Obama appointee, has said, we're going to the courtroom on the 4th of March, a day before Super Tuesday. Supporters of former President Trump are looking at this saying that timeline seems to clearly be designed to interfere with the primary process. What do you say?
What interferes with the primary process is Donald Trump's conduct and his insistence on continuing to run for president of the United States, despite the fact that he's been indicted in 4 different jurisdictions and is out on bail in 4 different jurisdictions in this country. Whether you believe the charges are just or not, they are here. And what it's going to do is put the Republican Party in an awful position.
It's going to put the Republican Party in an awful position. He's coming straight for Donald Trump, who he knew was watching, because this is what Trump then truthed out. It's a sloppy, okay, of course, come on. Sloppy Chris Christie, who was rated the worst governor in the history of New Jersey, had the lowest approval rating, 8%, had 11 straight downgrades of New Jersey bonds, a record, was thrown out of New Hampshire after his last debate and endlessly suffered from the horrible and never-ending Bridgegate scandal. This is all capitals, of course, should drop out of the race. He's going nowhere and is very bad for the Republican Party. Anybody who's following Donald Trump or is convinced that Donald Trump should be the candidate, that's not going to help people who are against him suddenly go, oh yeah, this guy yelled on a Truth Social post and therefore I'm going to switch my vote over. He's just getting it out. It's like a kid. He has to get the tantrum out. But again, Chris Christie noticed and he responded again.
He wrote today that you, all caps, should drop out of the race. He is going nowhere and is very bad for the Republican Party. What's your response to that?
He only wishes I was going away. And it's great, you know, for me, Caitlin, to live rent-free in Donald Trump's head. Obviously, he was watching the interview as I was doing it. I was laying out the truth about him, and I'm not getting out of this race. And maybe he should think about getting out of the race, since he'll be spending most of March and half of April in a courtroom.
He knows how to hit these points. I think he knows how to needle many folks, specifically Trump, because don't forget this part either, Ray. Remember, Chris Christie worked for Donald Trump in 2016, helping him with debate prep. He was in the room. He was standing behind him when Donald Trump said, go get back on the plane, loser. Get out of here. Talked about how he eats Oreos, and you got to stop eating those Oreos, Chris. He embarrassed him so many different ways. Maybe this is payback now. But one thing you should maybe point out is I worked for this guy, and maybe that was a mistake. I don't know if maybe he said it in some smaller settings that I haven't seen, but I think that might go much more of a longer way as far as including his attacks on Trump, which I think are pretty accurate.
Right. I think the attacks on Trump are accurate. I don't think that they're going to stick in the minds of the Republican voter base because, I mean, we've seen, we watched 4 years of a disastrous presidency. We've seen the past 3 years of him being indicted and continuing to lie about the election, and that hasn't dissuaded his base from leaving him. That hasn't dissuaded the core of the Republican Party from leaving him. Honestly, as whether or not the trial being right before Super Tuesday is going to impact the Republican Party, Chris Christie's probably the wrong person to ask about that because he won't still be in the race by Super Tuesday. I very highly doubt that his campaign will last that long. And once he drops out, watch him turn around and support Donald Trump, who will be the nominee again, because I don't think this is a man of convictions. I don't think this is a man who actually believes what he's saying. This is a man who wants the nomination and is, being the only person who's willing to attack Trump in this sort of manner. I mean, aside from Ron DeSantis's light jabs, but I mean, Chris Christie's the only person who's willing to vocally go against Donald Trump.
He was one of like two guys who did not raise his hand. He only did this at the debate. Kind of. I was convinced that he raised his hand, but he says he didn't. And now, if this goes down this way, he's going to have to stand by it. Chris Christie's a man of his word. One more aspect, though, because look, we talked earlier about the 14th Amendment, Donald Trump, and all of his legal issues. But sometimes people want to do something about it, and it hasn't happened yet, but maybe it will. Let's go straight to this part about this, though. We've gone up to New Hampshire where Chris Christie's attacking Donald Trump, but his other issues could possibly be with people in different states not even allowing him on the ballot, because Republicans in New Hampshire are fighting over whether or not Trump can be disqualified from their ballot in the upcoming election under the 14th Amendment. And it states that they can begin to wrestle with the issue whether Trump should be kept out because of all these legal problems. Let's go to those details, because Brian Corky Mesner, who's a New Hampshire attorney, ran for the US Senate in 2020 with Trump's endorsement, by the way, so he's a Trump guy. He has suggested that he intends to file a legal challenge that questions Trump's candidacy under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment that bars officials from holding federal or state office if they've engaged in an insurrection or rebellion against the United States or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. If those enemies are the January 6th folks, people ran up in the Capitol and Donald Trump said, free them all, they're actually patriots, that's giving some aid and comfort. Or even maybe being out on during that speech, which he says the best and biggest he's ever done, and sent them in there. Maybe it'll qualify, maybe it won't. Mesner has not even formally filed that challenge, he's just asking. He met with New Hampshire's Republican Secretary of State on Friday to discuss that issue. Scanlon said this and prompted pushback from the state's Republican Party, whose leader Chris Ager said that the party will fight to make sure that candidates are not denied access to the ballot. So they're going back and forth. But it's not just New Hampshire, as I pointed out. Beyond New Hampshire, Michigan's Democratic Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson also told MSNBC that she intends to seek a legal opinion on that same issue from the state's attorney general when the time is right. She suggested that she would work in conjunction with her counterparts in other battleground states, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Georgia, to see how they're going to proceed. This could actually spread. And it would actually be, at some point, they have to figure this whole thing out, obviously, because it is or it isn't. Last point here from Forbes. Voters have filed lawsuits in Michigan and Florida challenging the constitutionality of Trump being on the ballot. And that could force some state election officials to go ahead and look into this a little bit closer, check out these legal disputes over this issue. And they're expected to make it all the way to the Supreme Court, who we mentioned earlier, Ray. Seems like they're kind of a little bit less radical with the way they're going some of these things. I'm the pessimist when it comes to punishing Donald Trump. They're not going to keep him off of any of these ballots.
No, I'll just say if the Republican Party was smart and had any sense of self-preservation, they would be fighting their damnedest to make sure that Trump wasn't on the ballot, because then they could, they've been so captured by the Trump cult that, they haven't thought about what the party is going to be after him, because he's an old man. I'm sorry, but not in the best of health. He claims he weighs 215 pounds. Mm-hmm. Laughable. I'm sorry, we know that this man is not, does not take care of himself, eats so much McDonald's while he was president that the whole West Wing stunk so bad that his own staffers didn't want to go near it. And he'll probably end up going to jail. So, I mean, at some point, the party needs to reflect and realize that there is a post-Trump party. What is it going to look like? And should we be embracing it sooner rather than later? I'm glad they haven't had this come to Jesus moment, because it's better for me. I don't want them to have power in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, I think that they really should be taking these sorts of things more seriously.
The ones that are having their come to Jesus moment already, or realize some future for the party after Trump, are the ones that are polling probably the lowest. Chris Christie being the one who's probably doing the best, and we just saw just even New Hampshire, it's only at 9 or something. But you know, the Nikki Haley's and Mike Pence's of the world, they're not. Maybe eventually, but they don't like anyone that's saying anything different. So I think they're noticing that. Let's take this next break, though, you guys. Talk to you guys a few more minutes before we then come back and talk about one of my favorite candidates. He keeps impressing me. He keeps impressing me. Vivek Ramaswamy, there's more going on with him, and maybe he's reached his breaking point. We'll get to that in a second. Confirmation, all you guys talking about Max. Thank you. Let's go to my favorite candidate right now before he stumbles and finds himself out of the race. Here we go.
Before he loses himself.
You told Chuck Todd this about what you would do, what you would have done if you were in Mike Pence's position on January 6th.
Here's what I would have said. We need single day voting on election day. We need paper ballots, and we need government issued ID matching the voter file. And if we achieve that, then we have achieved victory, and we should not have any further complaint about election integrity.
So what would, what would you have done
through the Senate?
So what would you have done with Mike Pence? You would have not certified the election?
So in my capacity as president of the Senate, I would have led through that level of reform, then on that condition certified the election results.
So that means you would not have certified the results that night before midnight on January 6th, while that was your constitutional obligation. What if Kamala Harris did that? What if Joe Biden and Kamala Harris
To be clear,
would she have that same authority?
To be clear, I stand by what I said.
But how could you get legislation through, sir, in, you know, that kind of legislation through in time to certify the election? You would be violating your oath as vice president.
There would have been.
How many times have you seen Vivek Ramaswamy kind of have to pause and hesitate and not really sure how to answer? I guess that's the result of winning that debate last week. Some people thought he won because he goes through points really quickly, and people go, oh, that must be something true because he's talking really fast. He seems to know what he's talking about. I guess so. Sure, he won. But now that the target's on his back, people are asking him to explain his answers. So this whole thing, you guys don't have to necessarily listen to what is he saying. You can and find the ridiculousness in it. But this is more about how he's finally feeling some pressure, and I'm not sure how he's going to take it. So after she asked more Andrea Mitchell there, Vivek isn't feeling Andrea Mitchell. He gets a little bit more annoyed in his answer.
So I respectfully disagree, Andrea. I stand by what I said in that interview, not what you just said that I said. I said that that's exactly what I would have delivered, and then use that as an opportunity for heroism to reunite this country. Because there are two preconditions for the health of our constitutional republic. One is the peaceful transition of power. The other is public confidence in our elections. And when those come into conflict, that was a rare opportunity for heroism that I think Mike Pence missed.
But the Capitol was under attack. They were trying to complete it within that calendar day, as is constitutionally mandated. That's not the time to start proposing legislation.
So I would have begun. I would have begun on November 5th, and I've said this before, Andrea. I would have begun on November 2020.
Well, that's not what you said during the debate.
I would have begun in November 2020. Oh, that's exactly what I said, and I've said this for months now. We would have never gotten to that point had I been in power, either as vice president or the U.S. president.
I guess fighting might be something that works for him because he's definitely getting more upset. But then again, that's just Andrea Mitchell. Oh, yeah, sure, sure. All those libs on cable news are always coming after folks that are trying to explain themselves. There's also some conservatives that have started pulling out the knives as well. One being a Fox News pundit and Washington Post columnist. His name is Mark Thiessen. You guys may have heard of him. He also railed against Ramaswamy after he had this op-ed. Ramaswamy wrote this op-ed for the American Conservative about Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And I hate to clear that whole thing up. Maybe we can get us one of those details, but Mark breaks it down. He tweeted this, and he linked to that op-ed. He goes, "This by Vivek is criminally stupid." He quotes him by saying, "I will accept Russian control of the occupied territories and pledge to block Ukraine's candidacy for NATO in exchange for Russia exiting its military alliance with China. I will end sanctions and bring Russia back into the world market. In this way, I will elevate Russia as a strategic check on China's designs in East Asia. That's the quote from Ramaswamy's piece. And Mark Thiessen's response to that is like a freshman foreign policy paper, utterly disqualifying. And he wasn't even done because he came right back around and talked about his points about Taiwan and Chinese relations with them as well. And Mark said, amateur hour, all China hears is we can invade in 2028. This is how world wars get started. Again, this is conservative on conservative crime, Ray. And maybe people are finally tired of fast talking Ramaswamy. Maybe.
I mean, I don't really understand why the conservatives haven't gone after him for how he made his money. I think that when your voting base is the elderly people and he made his money off of a, you know, not working Alzheimer's medication, I think that that's a slam dunk. I mean, this man bought a pill that cost significantly less than other medications because he knew it didn't work, put his mom on the board to run these experiments and to try to make it look like it was good for trials, made a ton of money and literally did a pump and dump scheme of this corporation, then changed the name at the end so it was harder to trace back to him. I don't understand why they don't attack him for that. I mean, it's literally how he made his money. His only, you know, supposed qualification to be president is that he's rich. So go after how he made his money. I just can't wrap my head around. And I mean, I'm glad that some conservatives are going after his, you know, policy takes, but he has no qualifications. Again, aside from I'm a rich guy, so attack him on how he made his money. No one on the debate stage even brought it up.
Because they might have their own skeletons in their closet about how they made some money and they don't want that exposed. Or maybe they love the way he did. Like, good idea, Vivek. They're all on board. A little bit more though, because look, it's not just Mark Thiessen. He's not running for president. Why, who cares what he says about it? He's just some pundit and a writer. Well, the back and forth between Nikki Haley and Vivek also on that debate stage last week was one of the more intriguing things, at least from my opinion. I thought it was fun. But she's also coming after him as well as far as foreign policy as well. Because, you know, she's the foreign policy person. She's got to show her true, her actual advantage over other folks. So after Ramaswamy said he would not support Ukraine in the war against Russia, Nikki Haley accused him of supporting America's foreign adversaries and abandoning its friends. She says he wants to hand Ukraine to Russia. He wants to let China eat Taiwan. He wants to go and stop funding Israel. You don't do that to friends. What you do instead is you have the backs of your friends. She finished him off by saying you have no foreign policy experience and it shows. And that earned some applause from the crowd. That was, of course, at that debate. And maybe she did actually strike a nerve because she came at him straight up. It was like a, you know, it was like a, you're the young kid who just came around here. Nephew, chill out. You can't really do much here. And Ramaswamy was annoyed because Andrew Mitchell, I think, knew that as well. And she brought up Nikki Haley. He won't hear nothing about it. Here he is, still mad.
Let me play for you what Nikki Haley has said about what you've said about our allies.
That's not what I've said, but you can play Nikki Haley's lies.
You said that we should send destroyers through the Taiwan Strait once a week, keep ramping up naval deployments in the South China Sea to essentially deter China from trying to take over Taiwan until we have achieved semiconductor independence by the end of your first term in 2028.
The U.S., neither party even recognizes Taiwan as a nation right now. Both parties embrace the one China policy as we speak.
With a position
well, that's a good
that
thing because then you would know that what I've said strategic
Let me
ambiguity.
Play what Nikki Haley said about your position on Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan.
Yeah, it's a lie. Go ahead and play it. Yeah.
We do need friends. We do need allies. We should never stop doing that. And his idea of breaking the partnership with Israel? Israel's the first line of defense for Iran.
Would you respond to her?
Yeah, with due respect, my concern is that our steps and NATO's steps right now are marching us closer to world war.
They're marching us closer to world war. I want your last thoughts, but I want to go to, because there's a part of his website Ramaswamy did put forward to try and debunk things that people are saying about him that he says they're lying about. One particular that he took being Nikki Haley's talk about Israel and abandoning them. And there was a big part about this that he didn't highlight. But he says wrong about supporting Israel. He says, keep lying, Nimarata Randhawa. I'm sure I'm saying it incorrectly, so I apologize. Says the desperation is showing. By the end of Vivek's first term, the U.S.-Israel relationship will be deeper and stronger than ever because it won't be a client relationship. So he used her her given name, Indian name, and that's supposed to be embarrassing. And she responded back about how childish it was. But then again, this still ain't working. This is the Republican primary. They don't like either one of you guys. So you bring up the fact that you're not a rich cis male, a white male in America. They don't like you already, but maybe he's trying to chime into that. Your last thoughts here?
Yeah, my last thoughts are that this guy is a total scumbag. I'm glad he'll never be the president of the United States. I don't even know if he's necessarily running for that. I think he just wants to be famous. But I encourage everyone to check out, I'm sure that this show's covered it, the video of him asking a question in 2004 on MSNBC to just show how much of a grifter this loser is.
Always check it out more. I wish we did have that actually as well, because I had forgotten. But no, it's apparently the approach he's looking to take to appeal to these same folks who probably don't like his ass either. That's how it all works out. Maybe he'll get there. Some people say he's running for vice president. They're afraid of him being that as well. Let's take this break here, you guys. We're going to the aftermath in a few minutes. So hold on, sit tight. I was told to stop talking about ass cheeks, so I'll stop talking about ass cheeks. But hold on to those things in the back of your chair until we come back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.